Star Wars, Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 11, side 1. Letting the ship's motion throw him sideways, he half staggered, half fell across the storeroom to slam into one of the stacks of crates, turning at the last instant so that his back was to them. His hands, flung up over his head as if for balance, found the bottom corners of the topmost crate, and as the force of his impact shook the stack, he brought the box tipping over on top of him. He let it roll a quarter rotation toward his head, then shifted his grip and shoved it as hard as he could toward the Wraith. The alien caught it square on the upper torso, lost its balance, and crashed backward to the floor. Han was on him in a second, kicking his blaster out of the Wraith's hand and jumping after it. He caught up with the weapon, spun back up. The Wraith had gotten clear of the box and was scrambling to get back to his feet on a floor now slippery with spilled Menkuro whiskey. "Hold it," Han snapped, gesturing with the blaster. He might as well have been talking to a hole in the air. The Wraith continued on to his feet. And with the only other option being to shoot him dead, Han lowered his aim and fired into the pool of whiskey. There was a gentle whoosh, and abruptly the center of the room burst into blue-tinged flame. The alien leaped backward out of the fire, screaming something in his own language, which Han was just as glad he couldn't understand. The Wraith's momentum slammed him up against a stack of crates, nearly bringing the whole pile down. Han fired twice into the crate above the alien, starting twin waterfalls of alcohol cascading down around his shoulders and head. The alien screamed again, got his balance back, and with one final shot, Han set the waterfalls on fire. The Wraith's scream turned into a high-pitched wail as it twisted away from the blaze, its head and shoulders sheathed in flame. More in anger than pain, though, Han knew. Alcohol fires weren't all that hot. Given time, the Wraith would slap out the fire, and then very likely break Han's neck. He wasn't given that time. Midway through the wail, the storeroom's automatic fire system finally sputtered into action, the sensors directing streams of fire foam straight into the Wraith's face. Han didn't wait to see the outcome. Blinking past the temporarily blinded alien, he slipped out the door. The corridor, which had been crowded with panicking people when he'd first been grabbed, was now deserted. The passengers on their way to the escape pods, or the imagined safety of their staterooms. Firing a shot into the storeroom lock to seal it, Han hurried forward toward the ship's main hatchway, and hoped he'd get to Lando in time. From far below him, almost lost among the shouts and screams of frightened passengers, Lando could hear the muffled hum of activated pumps. Sooner than he'd expected, the Coral Panda was surrendering. He swore under his breath, throwing another quick look over his shoulder. Where in blazes had Han gotten to anyway? Probably hunting for Farrier, wanting to see what the slippery ship thief was up to. Trust Han to run off and play a hunch when there was work to be done. A dozen other Coral Vanda's crewers were busy taking up defensive positions inside the ship's main hatchway as he arrived. "I need to talk to the captain or another officer right away," he called to them. "Get back to your room," one of the men snapped without looking at him. "We're about to be boarded." "I know," Lando said, "and I know what the Imperials want." That one rated him a quick look. "Yeah? What?" "One of your passengers," Lando told him. "He has something the Empire..." "What's his name?" "I don't know. I've got a description, though." "Wonderful," the crewer grunted, checking the power level on his blaster. "Tell you what you do. You head aft and start going door to door. Let us know if you find him." Lando gritted his teeth. "I'm serious." "So am I," the other retorted. "Go on, get out of here." "But..." I said, move it. He pointed his blaster at Lando. If your passenger's got any sense, he's probably already ejected and is an escape pod anyway. Lando backed away down the corridor, the whole thing belatedly falling together in his mind. No, the ship supplier wouldn't be in any escape pod. He probably wouldn't even be in his stateroom. Ferrier was here, and knowing Ferrier, he wouldn't have deliberately shown himself like that unless he'd already won the race. The deck rocked slightly beneath his feet. The Coral Vanda had reached the surface. Turning, Lando hurried aft again. There was a passenger access computer terminal a couple of corridors back. If he could get a passenger list from it and find Ferrier's room, he might be able to get to them before the Imperials took control of the ship. Breaking into a quick jog, he turned into a cross corridor. They were striding purposefully toward him. Four large men with blasters at the ready, with a thin, white-haired man almost hidden in the center of the group. The lead man spotted Lando, snapped his blaster up, and fired. The first shot was a clean miss. The second sizzled into the wall as Lando ducked back behind the corner. So much for finding Ferrier's room, Lando muttered. Another handful of shots spit past his barricade. And then, surprisingly, the firing stopped. Blaster in hand, hugging the corridor wall, Lando eased back to the corner and threw a quick look around it. They were gone. Great, he muttered, taking a longer look. They were gone, all right, probably into one of the crew-only areas that ran down the central core of the ship. Chasing after someone through an unfamiliar area was usually not a good idea, but there weren't a whole lot of other options available. Grimacing to himself, he started around the corner and yelped as a blaster bolt from his right scorched past his sleeve. He dived forward into the cross corridor, catching a glimpse as he fell of three more men coming toward him down the main corridor. He hit the thick carpet hard enough to see stars, rolled onto his side, and yanked his legs out of the line of fire. Fully aware that if any of the original group was watching from cover, he was dead. A barrage of blaster shots from the newcomers bit into the wall, with a kind of clustering that meant it was being used as cover fire while they advanced on him. Breathing hard, that crash dive had knocked the wind out of him, Lando got to his feet and started toward an arched doorway halfway down the cross corridor. It wouldn't give him much cover, but it was the best he had. He had just made it to the doorway when there was a sudden curse from the direction of his attackers, a handful of shots from what sounded like a different model blaster, and then silence. Lando frowned, wondering what they were pulling now. He could hear footsteps running toward him. Flattening himself into the doorway as best he could, he leveled his blaster at the intersection. The footsteps came to the intersection and paused. Lando? Lando lowered his blaster with a silent sigh of relief. Over here, Han, he called. Come on, Ferrier's people have our man. Han rounded the corner and sprinted toward him. That's not all, buddy, he panted. Ferrier's gunning for you, too. Lando grimaced. He hadn't missed by much, either. Never mind me, he said. I think they must have gone down the ship's core. We've got to catch up with them before they reach the main hatchway. We can try, Han said grimly, looking around. Over there. Looks like a crewer access door. It was, and it was locked. Ferrier's people got in, Lando grunted, stooping down to examine the half-open release panel. Yeah, here, it's been hot-wired. Let's see. He probed carefully into the mechanism with the tip of his little finger, and with a satisfying click, the panel unlocked and slid open. There we go, he said. He got to his feet again. and jumped back from the opening as a stuttering of blaster fire flashed through. "Yeah, there we go, all right," Ann said. He was against the wall on the other side of the opening, blaster ready, but with no chance of getting a shot in through the rear guard's fire. "How many people has Farrier got on this ship, anyway?" "A lot," Lando growled. The door, apparently deciding that no one was going through after all, slid shut again. "I guess we do this the hard way. Let's get back to the main hatchway and try to catch them there." Han grabbed his shoulder. "Too late," he said. "Listen." Lando frowned, straining his ears. Over the quiet hum of ship's noises, he could make out the rapid-fire spitting of stormtrooper laser rifles in the distance. "They're aboard," he murmured. "Yeah," Han nodded. The deck vibrated briefly beneath their feet, and abruptly the laser fire slackened off. "Subsonic grenade," he identified it. "That's it. Come on." "Come on where?" Lando asked, as Han set off down the cross corridor. "Aft through the escape pod racks," the other said. "We're getting out of here." Lando felt his mouth drop open, but he looked at his friend, and his objections died unsaid. Han's face was set into tight lines, his eyes smoldering with anger and frustration. He knew what this meant, all right. Probably better than Lando did. The escape pod bobbed on the surface of the sea, surrounded by 100 other pods and floating bits of reef. Through the tiny porthole, Han watched, as in the distance, the last of the Imperial assault shuttles lifted from the Coral Vanda and headed back to space. "That's it, then?" Lando ventured from the seat behind him. "That's it," Han said, hearing the bitterness in his voice. "They'll probably start picking up the pods soon." "We did all we could, Han," Lando pointed out quietly. "And it could have been worse. They could have blown the Coral Vanda out of the water. It might have been days before anyone came to get us then." "Which would have given the Empire that much more of a head start." "Oh, yeah, great," Han said sourly. "We're really on top of things." "What else could we have done?" Lando persisted. "Scuttled the ship to keep them from getting him? Never mind that we'd have killed several hundred people in the process. Or maybe just gotten ourselves killed fighting three assault shuttles worth of stormtroopers. At least this way, Coruscant has a chance to get ready before ships from the Dark Force start showing up in battle." Lando was trying. You had to give him that. But Han wasn't ready to be cheered up yet. "How do you get ready to get hit by 200 dreadnoughts?" he growled. "We're stretched to the limit as it is." "Come on, Han," Lando said, his voice starting to sound a little irritated. "Even if the ships are in mint condition and ready to fly, they're still going to need 2,000 crewers apiece to man them. It'll be years before the Imperials can scrape that many recruits together and teach them how to fly the things." "Except that the Empire already had a call out for new ships," Han reminded him. "Means they already have a bunch of recruits ready to go." "I doubt they have 400,000 of them," Lando countered. "Come on, try looking on the bright side for once." "There's not much bright side here to look at," Han shook his head. "Sure there is," Lando insisted. "Thanks to your quick action, the New Republic still has a fighting chance." Han frowned at him. "What do you mean?" "You saved my life, remember? Shot those goons of Farriers off my back." "Yeah, I remember. What does that have to do with the New Republic's chances?" "Han," Lando said, looking scandalized. "You know perfectly well how fast the New Republic would fall apart without me around." Han tried real hard, but he couldn't quite strangle off a smile on that one. He compromised, letting it come out twisted. All right, I give up, he sighed. If I stop grousing, will you shut up? Deal, Lando nodded. Han turned back to the porthole, the smile fading away. Lando could talk all he wanted, but the loss of the Katana fleet would be a first magnitude disaster, and they both knew it. Somehow, they had to stop the Empire from getting to those ships. Somehow. Chapter 26. Mon Mothma shook her head in wonderment. The Katana fleet, she breathed. After all these years, it's incredible. Some might even put it more strongly than that, Phalia added coolly, his fur rippling as he gazed hard at Carda's impassive face. He'd been doing a lot of that throughout the hastily called meeting, Leia had noticed. Gazing hard at Carda, at Luke, at Leia herself. Even Mon Mothma hadn't been left out. Some might, in fact, have severe doubts that what you're telling us is true at all. Beside Carda, Luke shifted in his seat, and Leia could sense his efforts to control his annoyance with the Bothan. But Carda merely cocked an eyebrow. Are you suggesting that I'm lying to you? What? A smuggler lie? Phalia countered. What a thought. He's not lying, Han insisted, an edge to his voice. The fleet's been found. I saw some of the ships. Perhaps, Phalia said, dropping his eyes to the polished surface of the table. Of all those at the meeting, Han had so far been the only one to escape Phalia's posturing and his glare. For some reason, the Bothan seemed reluctant to even look at him. Perhaps not. There are more dreadnought cruisers in the galaxy than just the Katana fleet. I don't believe this, Luke spoke up at last, looking back and forth between Phalia and Mon Mothma. The Katana fleet's been found. The Empire's going after it, and we're sitting here arguing about it? Perhaps the problem is that you believe too much, or too easily, Phalia retorted, turning his gaze on Luke. Solo tells us the Empire is holding someone who can lead them to these alleged ships, and yet Carda has said only he knows their location. And as I've mentioned at least once today, Carda said tartly, the assumption that no one else knew what we'd found was just that, an assumption. Captain Hoffner was a very astute man in his way, and I have no trouble believing that he might have pulled a copy of the coordinates for himself before I erased them. I'm glad you have such faith in your former associate, Phalia said. For myself, I find it easier to believe that it is Captain Solo who is wrong. His fur rippled. Or has been deliberately deceived. Beside her, Leia felt Han's mood darken. You want to explain that, Counselor? He demanded. I think you were lied to, Phalia said bluntly, his eyes still not meeting Han's. I think this contact of yours, who I noticed you've been remarkably reluctant to identify, told you a story and dressed it up with false evidence. That piece of machinery you say Calrissian examined could have come from anywhere. And you yourself admitted that you were never actually aboard any of the ships. What about that Imperial raid on the Coral Vanda? Anne demanded. They thought there was someone there worth grabbing. Phalia smiled thinly. Or else they wanted us to believe that they did, which they very well might, if your unnamed contact is in fact working for them. Leia looked at Han. There was something there beneath the surface, some swirl of emotion she couldn't identify. Han? She asked quietly. No, he said, his eyes still on Phalia. He's not working for the Imperials. So you say, Phalia sniffed. You offer little proof of that. All right, then, Carda put in. Let's assume for the moment that all of this is, in fact, a giant soap bubble. What would the Grand Admiral stand to gain from it? Phalia's fur shifted in a gesture Leia decided was probably annoyance. Between her and Carda, they'd pretty well burst the Bothans' theory that Thrawn was not, in fact, an Imperial Grand Admiral. And Phalia wasn't taking even that minor defeat well. I should think that was obvious, he told Carda stiffly. How many systems would we have to leave undefended, do you suppose, in order to reassign enough trained personnel to reactivate and transport 200 dreadnoughts? No, the Empire has a great deal to gain by hasty action on our part. They also have a great deal to gain by our total lack of action, Carda said, his voice icy cold. I worked with Hoffner for over 2 years, and I can tell you right now that it won't take the Imperials a great deal of time to obtain the fleet's location from him. If you don't move quickly, you stand to lose everything. If there's anything out there to lose, Phalia said. Leia put a warning hand on Han's arm. That should be easy enough to check, she jumped in before Carda could respond. We can send a ship and tech crew out to take a look. If the fleet is there and seems operational, we can start a full-scale salvage effort. From the look on Carda's face, she could tell that he thought even that was moving too slowly. But he nodded. I suppose that's reasonable enough, he said. Leia looked at Mon Mothma. Mon Mothma? I agree, the other said. Counselor Phalia, you'll speak to Admiral Drayson at once about assigning an escort frigate and 2 X-Wing squadrons to this mission. Preferably a ship already here at Coruscant. We don't want anyone outside the system to get even a hint of what we're doing. Phalia inclined his head slightly. As you wish. Will tomorrow morning be sufficiently early? Yes. Mon Mothma looked at Carda. We'll need the fleet's coordinates. Of course, Carda agreed. I'll supply them tomorrow morning. Phalia snorted. Let me remind you, Captain Carda. Unless, of course, Counselor, Carda continued smoothly, you'd prefer I leave Coruscant tonight and offer the location to the highest bidder. Phalia glared at him, his fur flattening. But there was nothing he could do about it, and he knew it. In the morning, then, he growled. Good, Carda nodded. If that's all, then, I believe I'll return to my quarters and rest a while before dinner. He looked across at Leia, and suddenly there was something different in his face or his sense. She nodded fractionally, and his gaze slid unconcernedly away from her as he stood up. Mon Mothma, Counselor Phalia, he said, nodding to each in turn. It's been interesting. We'll see you in the morning, Phalia said darkly. A faintly sardonic smile touched Carda's lips. Of course. Then I declare this meeting adjourned, Mon Mothma said, making it official. Let's go, Leia murmured to Han, as the others began collecting their data cards together. What's going on? He murmured back. I think Carda wants to talk, she told him. Come on, I don't want to get bogged down here talking to Mon Mothma. Yeah, well, you go on, Han said, his voice oddly preoccupied. She frowned at him. You sure? Yeah, he said. His eyes flicked over her shoulder, and she glanced around in time to see Phalia stride from the room. "Go on. I'll catch up with you." "All right," she said, frowning at him. "It's okay," he assured her, reaching down to squeeze her hand. "I just need to talk to Phalia for a minute." "What about?" "Personal stuff." He tried one of those lopsided smiles she usually found so endearing. It didn't look nearly so innocent this time as it normally did. "Hey, it's okay," he repeated. "I'm just going to talk to him. Trust me." "I've heard that before," Leia sighed. But Luke had already left the room, and Carda was on his way out. And Mon Mothma had that look about her that signified that she was about to come over and ask Leia for a favor. "Just try to be diplomatic, all right?" His eyes flicked over her shoulder again. "Sure," he said. "Trust me." Phalia was heading down the grand corridor toward the assemblage chamber when Han caught sight of him, walking with that peculiar gait of someone who's in a terrific hurry but doesn't want anyone else to know it. "Hey," Han called. "Counselor Phalia." The only response was a brief flush of pale red across the nearest of the line of columns. Han lengthened his stride, and within a dozen quick paces had caught up with the other. "I'd like a word with you, Counselor," he said. Phalia didn't look at him. "We have nothing to discuss," he said. "Oh, I think we do," Han said, falling into step beside him. "Like maybe trying to find a way out of the jam you're in here." "I thought your female was the diplomat of the family," Phalia sniffed, throwing a sideways look at Han's shirt front. "We take turns," Han told him, trying real hard not to dislike the other. "See, what got you into trouble here was trying to play politics by Bothan rules. That bank thing made Akbar look bad, so, like any good Bothan, you jumped on him. Trouble is, no one else jumped with you, so you were left there all alone with your neck stuck way out and your political reputation on the line. You don't know how to back out gracefully, and you figure the only way to salvage your prestige is to make sure Akbar goes down." "Indeed," Phalia said acidly. "Did it ever occur to you that I might have stuck my neck out, as you put it, because I truly believed Akbar was guilty of treason?" "Not really, no," Han told him. "But a lot of other people think that, and that's what's got your reputation on the line. They can't imagine anyone making such a fuss without some proof."
"What makes you think I haven't any proof?"
"For starters, the fact that you haven't shown it," Han said bluntly. "Then there's the fact that you sent Brelia scrambling out to New Cove to try and make some sort of high-prestige deal with Senator Bel Iblis." "That is what Brelia was doing out there, isn't it?"
"I don't know what you're talking about," Phalia muttered.
"Right. And that's the third thing. The fact that 5 minutes ago you were ready to throw Bel Iblis to the Cravers if it would buy you enough time to bring in the Katana fleet." Abruptly, Phalia stopped.
"Let me speak frankly with you, Captain Solo," he said, still not looking directly at Han's face. "Whether you understand my motivations or not, I certainly understand yours. You hope to bring the Katana fleet to Coruscant yourself, and with that leverage to force my downfall and Akbar's reinstatement."
"No," Han said tiredly, shaking his head. "That's the whole point, Counselor. Leia and the others don't play by Bothan rules. They make decisions based on evidence, not prestige. If Akbar is guilty, he gets punished. If he's innocent, he gets released. It's that simple."
Talia smiled bitterly. Take my advice, Captain Solo, and stick with smuggling and fighting and other things you understand. The private rules of politics are far beyond you.
You're making a mistake, Counselor, Anne said, trying one last time. You can back out now without losing anything. You really can. But if you keep going, you risk bringing the whole New Republic down with you.
Felia drew himself up to his full height. I do not intend to fall, Captain Solo. My supporters among the New Republic military will see to that. Akbar will fall, and I will rise in his place. Excuse me now. I must speak with Admiral Drayson.
He turned and stalked off. Hen watched him go, the sour taste of defeat in his mouth. Couldn't Felia see what he was doing? That he was risking everything on a single long-shot bet? Maybe he couldn't. Maybe it took an experienced gambler to see how the odds were stacked here. Or a politician who wasn't so set in his own system that he couldn't change. Felia reached the end of the grand corridor and headed to the left toward the Admiralty Center. Shaking his head, Han turned and headed back toward Carda's guest quarters. First the Coral Venda, and now this. He hoped it wasn't the start of a trend.
Mara stood at the window of her room, staring out at the Manerai Mountains in the distance, feeling the oppressive weight of black memories gathering around her mind. The Imperial Palace. After 5 years, she was back in the Imperial Palace. Scene of important governmental meetings, glittering social functions, dark and private intrigues. The place where her life had effectively begun. The place where she'd been when it had ended. Her fingernails grated across the carved swirls of the window frame as well-remembered faces rose before her. Grand Admiral Thrawn, Lord Vader, Grand Moff Tarkin, advisors and politicians and sycophants by the hundreds. But above them all was the image of the Emperor. She could see him in her mind's eye as clearly as if he were staring in at her through the window, his wrinkled face frowning, his yellow-tinged eyes bright with anger and disapproval. You will kill Luke Skywalker. I'm trying, she whispered, to the words echoing through her mind. But even as she said it, she wondered if it were really true. She'd helped save Skywalker's life on Mirkur, had come begging for his help on Jomark, and had now uncomplainingly come to Coruscant with him. She wasn't in any danger, neither was Carda. There was no way she could think of why Skywalker would be useful to either her or any of Carda's people. She had, in short, no excuses left. From the next room over came the faint sound of a door opening and closing. Carda returned from his meeting. Turning from the window, glad of an excuse to drop this line of thought, she headed toward the door connecting their rooms. Carda got there first. Mara, he said, opening the door and poking his head through. Come in here, please. He was standing by the room's computer terminal when she arrived. One look at his face was all she needed. What's gone wrong? She asked. I'm not entirely sure, he said, pulling a data card from the terminal's copy slot. That Bothan on the Council put up a surprising amount of resistance to our offer. He basically forced Mon Mothma to hold off on any serious retrieval mission until the location's been checked out. He's getting a ship set up now for a morning flight. Mara frowned. A double cross? Possibly, but I can't see any point to it. Carda shook his head. Thrawn already has Hoffner. He'll get to the fleet soon enough. No, I think it more likely Thalia's playing internal politics here, perhaps connected to his campaign against Admiral Akbar. But I'd rather not take any chances. I've heard stories about internal Bothan politics, Mara agreed grimly. What do you want me to do?
I want you to leave tonight
for the Trogon system, he said, handing her the data card. Best guess is that's where Avis will have holed up.
Make contact.
And tell him I want everything we have that can both fly and fight to rendezvous with me at the Katana fleet as soon as possible. Mara took the card gingerly, her fingers tingling at the touch of the cool plastic. There it was, in her hands, the Katana fleet. A lifetime's worth of wealth or power. I may have trouble persuading Avis to trust me, she warned.
I don't think so, Carta said.
The Imperials will have reinstated the hunt for our group by now. That alone should convince him I've escaped. There's also a special recognition code on the data card that he'll know. A code the Grand Admiral couldn't possibly have extracted from me this quickly. Let's hope he doesn't have a higher opinion of Imperial interrogation methods than you do, Mara said, sliding the data card into her tunic.
Anything else?
No. Yes, Carter corrected himself. Tell Ghent I'd like him to come to Coruscant instead of going to the... Here after all this is over.
Ghent? Mara frowned. Why?
I want to see what a really expert slicer can do with that suspicious lump in Akbar's bank account. Skywalker mentioned a theory that the break-in and deposit happened at the same time. But he said that so far no one's been able to prove it. I'm betting Ghent can do so.
I thought this involvement in New Republic politics was supposed to be a one-shot deal, Mara objected.
It is, Carta nodded. I don't want to leave an ambitious Bothan at my back when we leave.
Point, she had to concede. All right. You have a ship for me to use?
There was a tap at the door. I will in a minute, Carta said, crossing to the door and pulling it open. It was Skywalker's sister.
You wanted to see me? She asked.
Yes, Carta nodded in greeting. I believe you know my associate, Mara Jade.
We met briefly when you arrived on Coruscant, Organa Solo nodded. For a moment her eyes met Mara's, and Mara wondered uneasily how much Skywalker had told her.
I need Mara to go on an errand, Carta said,
glancing both directions down the corridor before closing the door. She'll need a fast, long-range ship.
I can get her one, Organa Solo said. Will a reconnaissance Y-wing do, Mara?
That'll be fine, Mara said shortly. I'll call the spaceport and make arrangements.
She looked back at Carta. Anything else?
Yes,
Carta said. I want to know if you can throw together a tech team and get it into space tonight.
Consular Thalia's already sending a team, she reminded him.
I know that. I want yours to get there first.
She studied him a moment. How big a team do you want?
Nothing too elaborate, Carta told her. A small transport or freighter. Perhaps a starfighter squadron if you can find one that doesn't mind risking official wrath. The point is not to have Thalia's presumably hand-picked crew the only ones there.
Mara opened her mouth, closed it again without speaking. If Carta wanted Organa Solo to know that his own people would also be coming, he would tell her himself.
Carta glanced at her, back at Organa Solo. Can you do it?
I think so, she said. Thalia has built up a lot of support in the military, but there are enough people who would rather have Admiral Akbar back in charge.
Here are the coordinates, Carter said, handing her a data card. The sooner you can get the team moving, the better.
It'll be gone in 2 hours,
Organa Solo promised. Good, Carter nodded, his face hardening. There's just one more thing, then. I want you to understand that there are exactly 2 reasons why I'm doing this. First, as gratitude to your brother for risking his life to help Mara rescue me. And second, to get the Imperials off my back by eliminating their chief reason to hunt me down. That's all. As far as your war and your internal politics are concerned, my organization intends to remain completely neutral. Is that clear?
Organa Solo nodded. Very clear, she said.
Good. You'd better get moving, then. It's a long way to the fleet, and you'll want as much head start on Trillia as you can get.
Agreed.
Organa Solo looked at Mara. Come on, Mara. Let's get you your ship.
The comm beside Wedge Antilles' bunk buzzed its annoying call-up signal. Groaning under his breath, he groped in the darkness and slapped in the general direction of the switch. Come on, give me a break, huh? He pleaded. I'm still running on Ando time.
It's Luke, Wedge, a familiar voice said. Sorry to drag you out of bed, but I need a favor.
You feel like maybe getting your people into some trouble?
When aren't we in trouble? Wedge countered, coming fully awake. What's the deal?
Get your pilots together and meet me at the spaceport in an hour, Luke told him. Docking pad 15. We've got an old transport. We should be able to fit all your X-Wings aboard.
It's a long trip, then?
A few days, Luke said. I can't tell you any more than that right now.
You're the boss, Wedge said.
We'll be there in 1 hour.
See you then, and thanks.
Wedge keyed off and rolled out of bed, feeling a stirring of old excitement. He'd seen a lot of action in the decade he'd been with the Rebellion and New Republic. A lot of flying, a lot of fighting.
But somehow, the missions he remembered as being the most interesting always seemed to be the ones where Luke Skywalker was also involved. He wasn't sure why. Maybe Jedi just had a knack for that.
He hoped so. Between politics on Coruscant and cleaning up after Imperial raids across the New Republic, things were getting more and more frustrating around here. A change would do him good. Keying on the light, he pulled a fresh tunic out of his wardrobe and started getting dressed.
There was no problem getting the midnight transport off Coruscant. Leia's authorization guaranteed that. But a freighter with a cargo consisting of a dozen X-Wings was unusual enough to spark comment and speculation. And it was inevitable that the speculation would eventually reach the ears of one of Failure's supporters. By morning, he knew everything.
This goes well beyond internal political infighting, he snarled at Leia, his fur rippling back and forth like short stalks of grain caught in a succession of dust devils.
It was blatantly illegal, if not treasonous.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse and turn the cassette over now.